Welcome to the Keystone Kickoff Show, brought to you by the Keystone Sports Network. Get the best Penn State sports news and analysis at KeystoneSportsNetwork.com or download the Keystone Sports app from your smartphone.
Hello and welcome to the Keystone Kickoff Show. I'm Jim Galante. He is Chris Bucanani. This is our bi-week show. Chris, are you ready for it?
I sure am, Jim. Always, for sure. Let's do it.
Before we get started, I just want to invite everyone to join us for a live show at the cafe. That's on a week from this Tuesday, September 24th. It's brought to you by Keystone Sports and Fox Sports 98.7 in State College. We're having as our special co-host, former Nittany Lion, Rogers Alexander. We'll start the show at 6 p.m. Come on in early, get some great food and drink specials by the cafe. And Pulp Daddy Beer. That's right. Pulp Daddy Beer is back. Chris, I know you've tried it. Pretty good beer, isn't it?
It's very good. Yes. My compliments to the brewers, for sure. And I definitely want to encourage everybody who can come out and witness this live. I ran into Rogers on Friday morning at the cheese shop, and he and I were laughing. He said, I don't know if your buddy is prepared for the fact that I am just going to tell it like it is. I said, trust me, he will love it. The audience will love it. Rogers is great. Yeah, he'll be a really good on-air partner for you, Jim.
Well, I can't wait. I know Rogers a little bit. Great guy. Going to be a lot of fun. What do you think, Chris? Should we also do this during the show? Should we allow people in the audience to come up and ask questions? What do you think?
100% you should do that. Yes.
All right, there you go. You get to be a part of the show also. Again, that's Tuesday, September 24th. At the cafe. You all know the cafe. Fantastic place. Love JR, James, and all the folks there. They're fantastic. All right. Let's get to it, Chris. You know, since it's a bye week, I know it's pretty early in the season for a bye week, but let's use this opportunity to take stock in where this team is. Again, everything's a small sample size, but let's come to some early conclusions. That's what we do. Let's start with the offensive side of the ball. You know, Chris, we spent an entire offseason, not to mention most of last season, talking about the lack of explosive plays. That seems to be quite different this season. Agreed?
Yeah, and I don't think it's a mirage, since I guess we're kind of talking, is this stuff real? Can we believe in it after 2 weeks? After learning, I think now three full weeks, plus a week zero into the college football season, that moving the ball on the West Virginia Mountaineers is no great accomplishment. And, I don't know what to say about the MAC. They might be one of the Power Four conferences this season, frankly, till we get to the end of it. But we've seen Penn State roll it up on West Virginia out of the Big 12 and struggle with Bowling Green out of the MAC, but we're 2-0, and both games have featured, I think, a total over the two contests of 14 what they classify as explosive plays. And I do think, look, last season the number was so low, they were so conspicuously absent that was just something of an aberration, so there was going to be just some, you know, regression to the mean, right? But when you spend the amount of money that you do to bring in a guy who specializes in that, and Andy Kotelnicki, with the track record that he has, you pair him up with the talent Penn State has on the roster, and you get these results. And by the way, you look at what has been glaringly lacking for Kansas now that he's gone. I think we've got enough data points that I can feel pretty comfortable saying, yeah, this was not just luck through 2 weeks. Penn State's offense, if nothing else, is going to be considerably more explosive this season than it was in 2023.
I agree. It really has been. And I think there's enough there, as you said, to say, you know what, going forward, it is for real. And I think some of these things that make you or make me say, yes, it is for real, is let's take a look at Drew Aller. I think he's a different guy. He seems to have so much matured into the role as quarterback, and beyond just here's a really big arm who could chuck the ball around a little bit. It's his decision making, his mannerisms, just the way he carries himself feels different this season, Chris.
I agree with all of that. And in an ideal world, you wouldn't have maybe wanted it to come against Bowling Green. But on the other hand, you know, as I think about it, maybe not. He was put into a situation where, honestly, after the first few drives against West Virginia, the way that game was going, there was not a ton of pressure on his shoulders. In the Bowling Green game, with the defense just an absolute hot mess, there was increased pressure on the offense to play, you know, a joke, complimentary football. The defense is terrible. The offense has to pick them up and carry them. But for real, that was the first half of that game. If the offense came out even half as sluggish as the defense did against Bowling Green, you and I would be having a very different conversation now. So the fact that Drew was put into that situation where the onus was on him to take command of that offense and lead them to make the plays that offset the poor play of the defense, I think that was a growth opportunity for him. And it did seem to extend what we thought we maybe saw different about him in the first game of the season. So yeah, again, encouraging sign, much like with the explosive plays, I feel maybe not quite as confident, but relatively confident that we are seeing a different and better player at quarterback for Penn State this year.
And I look at individual plays, you know, just as well as our listeners know, Chris, what a pet peeve it was for me that he would never carry the ball. You know, the run read options, he'd give it to the running back every single time. Okay. I think he had to carry the ball once in a while just to show he could or he would. This year, boy, it's evident, but even more so for me, what I like seeing is when he drops back to pass and makes the decision to run the ball, I always feel like previously he would hesitate. There would be that extra beat, that extra second to think, hey, wait a minute, should I run? Not sure. This year, it just feels like his decision-making is so much quicker and with so much more confidence. Is that the game slowing down for him? Perhaps it is, but it seems like he makes those calls a lot quicker than he did a year ago.
I know I've repeated this point a number of times, and I can't remember if I said it on this program or not, but I do find the theory that Drew Aller's recruiting class, that class of 22, especially for quarterbacks, suffered from not having a junior high school season because of COVID. And I do think maybe there was something to that, that, you know, look, of course, most players are going to improve mentally as they get more reps in the, at whatever level they're playing at. But when you lose that key step in your maturation and the developmental cycle, all of that gets delayed even further. So, you know, you looked at Connor Basilak for Bowling Green. That guy's been doing it, you know, since the Barack Obama administration, right? And so, yeah, you get more reps, you're going to improve. So I do think a lot of it is just attributable to that. Drew needed to go through his paces last season, and now he's been there, done that. He's seen these things. He's had these experiences. He's really not doing anything for the first time as the starting quarterback at Penn State. And again, I'll circle back to Andy Kotelnicki. I'll give him some credit. He seems to have done some things to help set his quarterback at ease as well.
And also, I'm going to tie two things together here, one negative, one positive, which is the offense seems to only stop itself, okay? Whether it's a penalty that puts them behind the chains, a drop pass, or Drew Aller throwing just an inexplicable interception into the end zone, you know, where he was going with it and why. But in saying that, the other part to it is the interception doesn't bother me that much because we spent an entire season last year saying, you know what, he's so conservative, so afraid to throw the ball into traffic that we have, you know, it hurts him. Even this wonderful statistic that he hasn't thrown an interception, but he's not willing to take any chances. That seems to have evolved a bit. Did I like the interception? Of course not. But I think there's he did it through the interception, then just moved on from there, Chris.
Yeah, and you know, that comes with the territory. You're going to take more chances downfield and take more chances in general. Sometimes you're going to get a turnover, and sometimes you're just going to make a bad decision, right? You go back to Sean Clifford's first season as the starter, and overall for his career, his touchdown interception ratio was great, but he was very careful with the football in 2019 and then infamously made some bad decisions with it in 2020. Sometimes that's just going to happen. We all make mistakes in our lives. Quarterbacks all make mistakes. And I think the pick against Bowling Green was just a bad decision by Drew. It's going to happen. So yeah, no, I'm not concerned about that.
And, you know, you mentioned Sean Clifford. I think back to the infamous Iowa game on the road where,
yeah, hey, let's not.
Well, I'll just do the part where they were
joking. No, go ahead. Go ahead.
If you remember early on, he threw a terrible interception, just terrible, and then played exceptionally well after it. It was like it just washed right off his back, and he just said, fine, that's done. It's over. Boom. We move forward. And while Sean Clifford was still in the game, Penn State was routing Iowa. They were taking it to them. And I think that's the mentality that you want from your quarterback. And it, again, this is that it feels like Drew Aller is getting to that point as the quarterback of this team.
A lot of this stuff in football and in life, honestly, is mental. I was talking with somebody last week about athletic intelligence. There are a ton of people, relatively speaking, who are blessed with great athleticism. There's a much smaller number who can then pair that up with what you need between the ears. And there's no question, when you look at Drew Aller, he looks like a guy who could be taken number one overall, you know, or be taken in the first round of the NFL draft. He's got the physical tools. What we're seeing now is maybe some answers to the questions as, can he pair that up with the mental part of the game? And yeah, to your point, a big part of that, for quarterbacks and cornerbacks, especially those two positions, something goes bad, you just go back to the sideline or you go back to the huddle, and it's a whole new game every single snap. You just got to be able to shake it off and move on.
And I think Yogi Berra would have put it this way. Do you know what, Chris? 80% of this game is half mental.
100%.
All right, Chris, that is it for quarter number one of the show. We're not done talking about Penn State and where they are right now. A little later on in the show, we'll take a look back at this weekend's games, kind of the national picture. A lot of stuff happened, Chris, this weekend. But first, we'll get to a little more of this Penn State and where they sit right now during the bye week. Every day is a great day to join us at Cafe 210 West to enjoy our daily drink specials. Mondays, it's the Cafe Tea Pitcher for $5. Tuesday, Smirnoff Pitchers for $7. Wednesday, Bacardi Pitchers are $7. And Thursdays, enjoy Cafe Tea Pitchers for $5. All week, we have half-off draft beer and cafe tea from 9 to 11 p.m. and 6 to 8 p.m. on Fridays. So get the gang together and come on down to Cafe 210.
It's quarter number two on the Keystone Kickoff Show, brought to you by the Keystone Sports Network. Get the best Penn State sports news and analysis at KeystoneSportsNetwork.com or download the Keystone Sports app from your smartphone.
Hello and welcome back to the Keystone Kickoff Show. He's Chris Buccanani. I'm Jim Galante. And just a reminder, Chris, when you come to a fork in the road, take it.
I get it. Yogi Berra. Yes, sir. Do you want me to tell you another quick Yogi Berra story, Jim, since it's the bye week and this is what you do on your show? You entertain these digressions?
Yes.
So I heard a good – I'm going to get some of the details wrong, but basically this is a story that Whitey Ford and Yogi Berra told, that one day Whitey's pitching in the first inning of a Yankees game, and first pitch he throws, he hits the batter. The guy goes to first. Next pitch – The guy makes contact, base hit, puts a guy on second and third. Next batter comes up. First pitch he throws him, the guy cranks it out. So I think it was Casey Stengel was the manager at that time. He comes out to the mound, and they have a meeting where the catcher comes over, and Casey says to Whitey, he's like, Whitey, what's going on? You all right? He said, I feel good. I think it's okay. And he looks over at Yogi Berra, and he says, What do you think? What do you think he has it today? And Yogi Berra says, I don't know. I haven't caught one yet.
There are some phenomenal Yogi Berra stories. And yeah, I'll
shout
give
out
you-
to Bill Clark at the cheese shop for telling me that one. Bill probably watched that game live.
Well, here's one of the Yogi Berra stories that I like. Yogi was famous or infamous for being the luckiest guy, you know, apparently. He just, everything fell his way. Those of us who are old enough to remember, like, the chocolate drink Yoo-Hoo.
Sure.
Yogi Berra endorsed it and got a piece of the company for it. And that turned into a bazillion dollars. It's just everything he did came out his way. So one time the Yankees are taking a flight somewhere, obviously, to play. And they start to hit really bad weather. And the plane starts just shaking and they're all getting scared. I mean, this, it's really bad storm they're flying into. And one of the guys says, don't worry, nothing can happen to us. As long as we have Yogi here, the luckiest man in the world, nothing could go wrong. They all look at each other. It dawns on them. Yogi wasn't on the flight. When his story was told, the guys were never so scared in their life than when they realized Yogi wasn't on that flight with them. So that's one of my favorite Yogi stories. All right, let's move on. Let's get back to this Nittany Lion team that they're on a bye week. Chris, just taking stock in where they are with the team, went mostly positive. I'm going to give you one more positive one, which is Nick Singleton back? We're seeing some more explosive plays already in two games than I think we saw all season last year, Chris.
Yes, I am not concerned at all about either one of the backs. I wasn't worried about Catron Allen after he had a subpar performance against West Virginia. And to your point about Nick Singleton and his explosivity, let's remember that this is really dating back to the end of last season and when you made the offensive coordinator change. The moment you saw the shift from Yurcich to Ty Howell and Juwan Sider taking over there, Nick started to look more like Nick almost instantly. So, yeah, I feel, once again, like we've got a big enough sample size that I can be confident in saying yes. The Nick Singleton we knew and loved from his freshman campaign in 2022 is back.
And remember, James Franklin has pointed out more than once how those last couple games went, kind of like his parting shots at Mike Yurcich.
Well, and he also, he's taken plenty of subtle jabs at Mike. I mean, James, you hired him, buddy. But he would also point out, I'm sure, that in some ways, Nick Singleton never went away because he argued, I remember at the end of last season, that as a complete player, in terms of all the other things you need to do to be a good running back, your pass blocking and going out as a receiver and the little details, he really felt like Singleton matured from his freshman to his sophomore campaign. So now if he's putting everything together, that's good news for Penn State, because even with Drew Aller playing a lot better, questions remain among the receiving core. I believe it. I've always believed that when you have stud running backs like Penn State does, you've got to build your offense around those guys. So we're going to need Nick to be at his best throughout the season if we're going to chase one of these playoff spots.
By the way, you thought James Franklin's shots at Yurcich were subtle? Bless your heart. Okay, Chris, I think we at least questioned, we wondered how the offensive line would look with a couple of new tackles and a new center. Three guys who were headed to the NFL that they had to replace. Two games in, what's your take?
I'm cautiously optimistic as I was going into the season. You know my shtick, Jim. I'm always superstitious about saying anything nice about the offensive line because I'm afraid as soon as I do, it's going to go south. But I keep coming back to this point. Body of work. Can we believe what our eyes are showing us? I don't think there's any question that if we look back over the last few seasons of Penn State football, and then we put them in the context of the last 7, 8, 9, or 10 years since James has gotten here, we can say there have often been cases, as was the situation in 2017, in my opinion, where the offensive line was maybe the key weak link of the team. when we look at struggles, when we look at Saquon Barkley not getting the trip he deserved to the Downtown Athletic Club to be part of the Heisman ceremony, even if he doesn't win the trophy, a lot of the blame for that falls on the shoulders of the offensive linemen who were here at the time. And I think for the last few years, offensive line has not been the liability that it had been in previous seasons. And I think that speaks to the development and the coaching of Phil Troutwine. If you look at the talent we've brought into the program, and O-line is a very difficult position to recruit from high school to college, not just at Penn State, that's everywhere. I think he has increased as a recruiter the quality of the raw material at our disposal. And when you put those things together, and then when you look at the way this O-line has played through 2 weeks, again, I'm not sure I'm ready to declare it fixed or a strength of the team necessarily, but I do feel pretty good about saying that once again, it's not going to be a chief liability. It's not going to be the main reason Penn State is losing games. And in the context of the last decade of Penn State football, I'll take that every single time.
Oh, definitely. It's not a liability anymore. That will take. Just definitely we will take that. All right, let's go to the other side of the ball. Abdul Carter makes the big move to defensive end. We talked about it all offseason. How's it going?
Okay, I guess. I thought Abdul was disruptive throughout the West Virginia game. Again, after watching those miserable losers just inexplicably, or no, forget it, no, explicably, right? To paraphrase Dennis Green, they are who we thought they were. Blow that 10-point lead with 5 minutes left against Pitt. I mean, that kind of ruined my whole weekend, if I'm being honest. So thanks very little, West Virginia, and thanks for the great, just complete soiling of any strength of schedule benefit we had from beating you. So that's all great. But when I look back on that game, I thought Abdul, he really impacted the game throughout. I don't know, and I'll be honest, I probably should have gone back and rewatched more of Bowling Green than I did. I did not get that sense from him from that game on a consistent basis, and in the offside penalties continue to be a concern. I think if I'm coming out of these first two games, and again, I understand it's a tiny sample size, folks. What do you want us to do? Okay, we've had two games. There's only so much we can talk about here. We're doing our best. All of my concerns, save the receiver core I mentioned previously, are on defense. And the defensive line is probably, if I'm being honest, even more of a concern to me than depth at linebacker. Even though if I was going to say what's the most acute issue, it would be linebacker depth. But in the way the game is played now, and what's going to be necessary for Penn State going forward, is you're either going to need to be stout at the line of scrimmage to handle a team like Illinois that's going to want to be physical, or you're going to have to do some things to help your secondary, which I still think is really good, by pressuring the passer. And all that falls on the front four, right? And that, to me, is just maybe my biggest concern. I still think we can figure the receiving core out thing, you know, with Ty Warren and the running backs. And we've seen some flashes from some of the receivers. There have been limited opportunities. Frankly, we keep fixating on the number of guys who have caught passes. It's kind of the way these games have gone. You only have so many passing attempts and you take what's there. So, yeah, defensive line is concerning to me. And I'm not really sure that the Abdul Carter move has gone swimmingly through 2 weeks.
And I think let's give a little bit of credit to Bowling Green. Not a lot. Let's give a little bit of Bowling Green, give them credit. They had a game plan that they executed really well, which was to get the ball out of the quarterback's hands quickly,
for sure,
short passes. And
they did a good job moving the pocket and rolling him out. They did everything they could to negate the pass rush. So that's why all of this needs an asterisk. We need a few more weeks to watch these guys.
Right. And it definitely worked for half a game. There is no doubt about that. And again, I thought so much of that, Bazelak, the quarterback, just played an exceptional game, but he's been playing so long. Didn't he enter school as a freshman the same year you did, Chris?
About the same time. I think so. Yeah. That was his redshirt year.
I thought so also. And just to put an extra stamp on this talk of the wide receivers, not enough of them catching passes. I don't know if I pointed this out on your show or on another show last week. Do you realize that in two games, the number of passes that Drew Aller threw were fewer than what Bazelak threw in the one game with Bowling Green against Penn State?
Yeah, I think that gets washed out over the course of eight quarters. People just lose track of that, and they start losing their minds looking at these receiver stats because everybody is so justifiably concerned about the position after last season. But when you sit down and you look at it and you say, look, if Ty Warren's open, the guy's going to go for a school record in receiving yards for a tight end. Well, you want him to not throw to him because you want some idiot in the stands to feel more confident that Liam Clifford is going to get involved in the offense? No, just take what is being given to you.
Right. And he's thrown a total of 37 passes, which could have been a one game total.
Yeah, no question.
Look at it that way. The number of completions to Trey Wallace, to Tyler Warren, to Omari Evans, all of a sudden, hey, it doesn't look so bad the way people want to put it. They do lose sight of that. All right, Chris, that's it for quarter number two. When we come back, it was a fun weekend of football. It was fun getting a chance to watch all of it. Going to talk to you about it when we come back. Every day is a great day to join us at Cafe 210 West to enjoy our daily drink specials. Mondays, it's the Cafe Tea Pitcher for $5. Tuesday, Smirnoff Pitchers for $7. Wednesday, Bacardi Pitchers are $7. And Thursdays, enjoy Cafe Tea Pitchers for $5. All week, we have half-off draft beer and cafe tea from 9 to 11 p.m. and 6 to 8 p.m. on Fridays. So get the gang together and come on down to Cafe 210.
Let's get back to the action on the Keystone Kickoff Show. Brought to you by the Keystone Sports Network. Get the best Penn State sports news and analysis at KeystoneSportsNetwork.com or download the Keystone Sports app from your smartphone.
Hello and welcome back to the Keystone Kickoff Show. I'm Jim Galante. He is Chris Buchanani. Just a reminder, a week from this Tuesday, that's Tuesday, September 24th, we'd like to invite you all to join us for a live show from the cafe in downtown State College. It's brought to you by Keystone Sports and Fox Sports 98.7 in State College. We're having as our special co-host, former Nittany Lion, Rogers Alexander. Anyone who knows Rogers knows it'll be a fun time talking to Rogers. We're going to start the show at 6 p.m. Come on in early, get some great food and drink specials by the cafe. And Pulp Daddy beer. If you haven't tried Pulp Daddy beer yet, you are in for a treat. Again, that is on Tuesday, September 24th at the cafe in downtown State College. All right, Chris, I'll tell you what. This was kind of a fun weekend because I didn't have to spend my entire day first anticipating Penn State, watching Penn State, then getting relieved that they survived Bowling Green, okay? I got a chance to just sit quietly and watch a lot of football essentially all day Saturday. It was great. I wasn't going to start here, but since you mentioned it, let's talk West Virginia Pitt. An exciting game. I know neither you nor I were happy with the end result.
Trash.
I want to start with this, though. Did you see Pat Narduzzi's post-game interview?
I did. It was typical Pat. I mean, that guy is truly, he is the perfect personality fit for that program and its fan base.
I just come away from all the time when he's interviewed. He just can't help himself. He can't. He's got to say something stupid. For those of you who didn't see it, a lot of penalties in the game. There were combined 18 penalties for over 170 yards. Calls went both ways. I think West Virginia had a touchdown taken off the board. It just a lot was happening. But when interviewed after the game, he was so proud of his team because they not only beat West Virginia, they also beat the officials who were against them.
Yeah, to be fair, I kind of thought the refs were piling it on that last drive. So I understand why maybe he felt that way. He, you know, conveniently neglected the first three quarters of the game, including one that took a touchdown off the board for West Virginia. By the way, none excuses the collapse of the Mountaineers. Like, Neil Brown should have been Lane Kiffin. That guy should have been calling Chris the Buzzsaw Adamski from TribLive.com. Hey, can I crash in your basement tonight? Because I'm at the Pittsburgh airport and I have no way to get home. I got to drive back to Morgantown tomorrow. I got to call an Uber or something here. Yeah, like ridiculous. West Virginia, don't ever schedule them ever again. I hope we never schedule them again. I hope we keep the win total at an even 50 for all time. I do not want them to make another dollar off Penn State. Screw West Virginia. Fire Neil Brown. Kick them out of the Big 12. Just disgusting. Disgusting. That said, I hate them for this. I hate it. I've got to say some complimentary things about Pitt and Pat Narduzzi. He really has done, this is just killing me to my very core, but I got to be honest. I got to call it like I see it. He has done a nice job recovering from the terrible season they had last season. I thought Holstein, that quarterback, that guy made play after play after play. He is a redshirt freshman. They have got something there at the quarterback position. Now, listen, I said Pat Narduzzi was the perfect fit for the program and the fan base. Totally. You watch that guy do the post-game interview. He is like an undercard heel in professional wrestling, right? One of those guys who doesn't quite have the right personality, is maybe not quite, you know, not big enough, doesn't have the look, doesn't have the athleticism. He's good enough to be in the league. He is never going to be one of the feature guys. He's never going to be a star, but he is absolutely giving it his all. So he just pours on the act, trying to get above his station, but he's right where he belongs. That's Pat Narduzzi, and that's Pitt football in 2024. The undercard heel to college football's professional wrestling world. So, credit to Pitt. That program has never gone in its history undefeated through its non-conference slate. And now, thanks to those dopes from Morgantown, West Virginia, those absolute losers in the West Virginia Mountaineers football program, they're one win over the Youngstown State Penguins from doing it for the first time. Absolutely disgusting. I can't even say what I think should happen to the coach and players from that team because we're on the radio.
I love when we get salty Chris. Like it a lot.
Absolutely infuriating.
I want to point out a call that Pat Narduzzi made in the game, and I don't know if you caught this. When West Virginia had the ball, their last possession, Narduzzi started using his timeouts, which, by the way, I agree with. Use the timeouts when the other team has the ball. When you have the ball, you have some control over the clock. When the other team has it, you do not. However, with that said, we now have a two-minute timeout in college football, and it was fourth down for West Virginia, 2:09 on the clock. Narduzzi calls another timeout, okay? And to say this is hindsight is wrong, because even the announcer called him out on this, which was, why is he calling the timeout there? Because when the punt happens, you're going to hit this two-minute timeout anyway. So by doing it, you're using up a timeout that you could have saved. So they punted. The clock's going to stop with a change of possession. So there's now 1:59 left, and the clock stops then. So he now only has one timeout left. If he had let the clock run down to the two-minute timeout while West Virginia had the ball, he only lost those 9 seconds. A punt, he would have got, yes, the clock would have gone down to 1:50 as opposed to 1:59, but he would still have two timeouts and be able to save a lot more time. So, and it's not hindsight, because this announcer, who's not necessarily your prime time announcer, but he very quickly was like, hey, why is he doing this? So I want to know if the Pitt media is going to ask Pat about that. I'd love to get his explanation.
Well, probably not now after that you know, rivalry win for the ages. Those two teams, they care about that rivalry. Honestly, when we get down to it, more than either one of them cares about playing Penn State, okay? Because they're kind of closer to each other's level, if I'm being honest. And so their fans and the media and everyone around that program, they're all going to be euphoric, and they deserve to be. They earned it. I hate to have to say it, but I got to give credit where it's due. And in some ways, again, as a Penn State fan, I kind of like the idea that Pitt might be something other than an afterthought to an afterthought. Maybe we could play him again in the future, and that game could have some meaning attached to it. But you make a great point. When he took the first time out, I said out loud, I was like, oh, that's very smart, very smart, because he used the two-minute warning to save a timeout. And then he uses another timeout with nine seconds before the warning kicks in. And I said, well, there you go. And that's why he'll always be an undercard, Jim.
Narduzzi being Narduzzi. But anyway, Chris, the other part of this weekend that I thought was interesting, we're talking about this West Virginia-Pitt rivalry, is this was essentially, it was rivalry week. We had Colorado, Colorado State, Washington, Washington State, Oregon, Oregon State. That's what college football is about, those rivalries. Those teams really don't like each other.
Not that anymore. Now it's about playing Villanova and Nevada and just a bunch of joke, nothing programs that nobody wants to watch in person. Nobody wants to watch on television because we don't want to risk taking any losses that could cost the conference money by missing out on a playoff spot. I don't know what you're talking about with all this pageantry and tradition and entertainment value, Jim.
It's fun. I enjoyed listening to the Colorado and Colorado State players talk about their opponent. The coaches were going at it between those two teams. That, to me, adds so much more to the game, Chris. I absolutely love it. So
listen to the passion in our voice. Listen to how much we're enjoying this, and consider that all the people who are in charge of making business decisions for this sport as an entertainment product, they are looking at all these types of games we're describing, these regional rivalries, these historical matchups, and they're saying, let's do everything we can to get this out of the game so we can have more non-conference one-offs with Delaware.
Yes, that's what's bothering me about this game. And I absolutely love college football. I know you do too. And I'm looking at the positive aspect to these shuffling of teams within the different conferences. Hey, we get to see games against USC and Oregon. We're going to see like Alabama playing Texas, things like that. That's the great part of it.
Yeah, and UCLA, can't wait for that one.
Well, you got to take the bad with the good, but I will take UCLA.
That is charitable, man. That is charitable for those
UCLA
guys.
Has a chance to one day be respectable.
Sure.
Delaware does not.
Correct.
That's the difference, Chris, and I don't even know – people will say, I know I've said it. Yeah. Why can't someone step in and regulate this, disallow it? Well, who's going to do it? The NCAA has no power at all. Are we ever going to see like the commissioners of the Big Ten and the Southeast Conference saying, whoa, 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 no more games, guys, against Kent State? We're not going to see Tennessee 71, Kent State 0 anymore.
Not until this thing is a little bit more unified under structured oversight or management, but which I do think could happen in the future. And to your point, would be healthier for the sport as an entertainment product, which is why it's worth all this money in the first place. As we come to the end of the segment here, since we talked about Holstein, the Pitt quarterback, I just want to talk about the guy he replaced, former Penn Stater Christian Veyer. Congratulations to him with the big, dramatic, game-winning score for Georgia State over Vanderbilt. It's Vanderbilt and everything, but you're Georgia State, so congratulations to Christian. That was a big play. It was pretty cool.
Remember, Vanderbilt hasn't looked too bad this year, so that's still considered an upset. Good for him.
You're Georgia State. You beat an SEC school, even if it is Vanderbilt, who already has a win over Virginia Tech under their belts. That's a big W. So Christian Veyer didn't work out at Pitt, but going pretty well for him so far this season.
All right. Congratulations to him. All right. That is it for quarter number three. Chris, there were so many other things that I want to talk to you about that happened this weekend in college football. We'll do that right after this break. Every day is a great day to join us at Cafe 210 West to enjoy our daily drink specials. Mondays, it's the Cafe Tea Pitcher for $5. Tuesday, Smirnoff Pitchers for $7. Wednesday, Bacardi Pitchers are $7. And Thursdays, enjoy Cafe Tea Pitchers for $5. All week, we have half-off draft beer and cafe tea from 9 to 11 p.m. and 6 to 8 p.m. on Fridays. So get the gang together and come on down to Cafe 210.
We head to the home stretch in quarter number four on the Keystone Kickoff Show, brought to you by the Keystone Sports Network. Get the best Penn State sports news and analysis at KeystoneSportsNetwork.com or download the Keystone Sports app from your smartphone.
Hello and welcome back to the Keystone Kickoff Show. It's quarter number four. He's Chris. I'm Jim. We're talking college football. Chris, Penn State was off this weekend, so it was a chance to watch all the other games. And have you ever seen such a disaster, such a dumpster fire, such a car crash as what's going on with Florida State and Florida?
Boy, it is brutal down in the Sunshine State, is it not?
It really is. And I'm going to go out on a limb here. If you remember last year, of course, Florida State went undefeated and didn't make the college football playoffs.
Right.
I'm going out on a limb. I'm projecting them as not making it again this year, Chris.
I texted some folks during the game and I said, I'm starting to think Florida State is going to miss the playoffs. Yeah. Well, and if you go back, Jim, to one of the shows you and I did over the summer, I said, just wait. This Florida team is not good. They know their head coach is a dead man walking. And I firmly believe that Billy Napier kept his job because they did not want to saddle the new guy with this roster and this schedule that they have this year. I said, this guy is going to be canned by October at the latest. And then we're going to have to endure months of James Franklin to Florida rumors. And I'm already seeing them online. So welcome to our latest nightmare in that regard. I have seen some questions about Mike Norvell's job security. In my opinion, that guy should be given a little bit more time down there. Now, I don't know the intricacies of what's going on behind the scenes. Maybe bridges were burned. Maybe there are people within the administration who don't like him or vice versa. But the guy takes you to 13-0, and he does it through a strategy that was signed off on by their athletics administration, which was heavily favor the transfer portal. Well, as we saw with Mel Tucker at Michigan State, that cuts both ways. And sometimes, you come up big and sometimes you roll snake eyes. And that just seems to be what happened with Florida State this past season. They brought guys in via the transfer portal to replace the talent they offloaded to the NFL. And it just didn't work out. They didn't buy into the culture. They don't appreciate being in Tallahassee versus being anywhere else. I always talked about, I think James Franklin does a good job in the portal of finding guys who want to play for Penn State versus guys who want to play college football generically. They don't really care where they are and what makes it distinct or special. And that seems to be the deal in Tallahassee. But I do think there's a lot to be said for stability. So no matter how this season goes, I think you just call Norvell in and say, okay, man, everyone gets a mulligan. All right, let's just figure out what's the plan to rebuild from here.
And, you know, as we record this, Chris, Billy Napier is still a coach at Florida. By the time our audience listens to it, he may not be. What I find a lot of fun is seeing some of these online folks who they want coaching. There is a lot of Urban Meyer to Florida comments. The other one that I just love is Urban Meyer to Florida and Jimbo Fisher back to Florida State.
Well, I'd be surprised if you saw that one for sure. That would be
I would too, but it certainly would be fun, wouldn't it?
It would. That's what makes the sport entertaining. Hey, before we get too far down the line, Jim, I do just want to shout out. You were talking about how Penn State had the weekend off. You know who else took the weekend off?
Who's that?
The Mississippi State Bulldogs, because they got run off the field by the Rockets, baby. TOLEDO. How about them Toledo Rockets? How about the whole MAC? What a big win for Toledo.
Well, there are so many games going on like that that are just crazy, Chris. And I know this isn't that kind of crazy upset, but I wanted to hit on it. Georgia, the one sure thing, I thought, the one sure thing, they escaped Kentucky. Yeah. 1-point win. Do you know that Georgia had 65 yards? That's 65 yards of offense in the first half of that game.
Yeah, credit to Mark Stoops and that defense. He is a good head coach and a great defensive coach, and he had them ready to play. And it goes back to what we talked about after Penn State Bowling Green. Part of, to me, what makes college football so much fun as a sport is the level of variance you get from week to week in the way the teams play. I like that you can have the number one team in the country, one of the best programs over the last 5 years in college football, stocked with five-star recruits, with maybe the best head coach working right now. And they come out, they play a Kentucky team that had their butts handed to them last week and looked absolutely terrible, came into the game totally overmatched. And they were up and Georgia was down, and you had an entertaining four quarters of football. It's the best sport, as far as I'm concerned. I don't know how you don't think that.
It really is. It's the best. However, I want to, before we get too far along and I miss out on my opportunity, could I throw a little salty Jim at you?
Do it.
Here's a couple things that struck me this weekend. The 2-minute timeout. Okay. Remember why they tell us that they put that in.
But don't do that. Don't do the corporate. You call it a 2-minute warning. I don't. Right. I'm going to insist on calling it a 2-minute warning, actually.
Fair. Okay. The 2-minute warning.
Thank you.
I was just trying to be a team player there, the timeout. But
not until they pay us.
It was going to save us from those earlier back-to-back commercials. do you know? Yes. In the Oregon game, there was a touchdown scored with 1 second left. 1 second left in the quarter, and they went to commercial break.
Amazing.
Now, who'd have thunk it? When they come back, they have to go right to commercial break again as they get to the end of the quarter. So that 2-minute warning has been really effective at dodging it. And just one more little thing. All right, Chris, I watched Fox at noon, hoping Wisconsin Alabama was going to be competitive. So I hear, the little bit of the pregame show as they're leading into it. Have you or anyone you know, Chris, ever called chicken nuggets nugs?
Yes, because I live in a college town and my daughter's generation alpha, and I'm around a lot of Gen Zers. So yes, people I know
really
have called nuggets nugs. Absolutely.
I obviously live a sheltered life.
Yeah.
I've never heard it, and it bothers the hell out of me. I don't know why, but I just hate it.
Nugs, nuggies. Yeah, for sure.
I am now.
That's Skibbity, Ohio, Jim, of you.
All right, you got
El Riz.
I don't even know what you're talking about, so I'm moving on. You have a daughter, so you know what the language is. I obviously do not.
I'm hip. All right. I'm with it.
I am not. All right, here's a couple more. How about this for a stat line from over the weekend, Chris? How about a quarterback?
By the way, that was like a 30-year-old movie reference I just threw out for the Gen Xers in the audience. So yeah, I'm actually not hip or with it. But anyway, go on.
Michigan quarterback did not throw an incompletion.
Yes, I saw that.
11 for 14 and 3 interceptions, Chris. The ball never hit the ground.
Yeah, it's a real shame.
I didn't see any of that game, but Michigan continues to, who'd they play, Arkansas State or someone, and they kept it competitive for a while.
Yeah, let me give you one of my real takeaways from this weekend, Jim, which is that the Big Ten stinks. I think this conference has one good team, and the rest of it is varying levels of, to use another word from the Gen Alpha parlance, mid to worse. And the worse is really, really bad. The MAC might be a deeper conference than the Big Ten this year, and I'm not even being sarcastic.
Oh, well, Washington went down also.
Trash. Just UCLA, absolute garbage. That team is garbage. Poor Deshaun Foster. I don't know how you do that to one of your great alums. You put him in charge of that trash fire. The conference is so bad. Purdue, complete crap. Rutgers and Indiana might be two of the best teams in the Big Ten. Honestly, I'm disgusted by this conference, and I'm disgusted that Penn State's a part of it. It's just gross. I'm happy to take the whatever it is, $80 million they're getting from the TV deal next year, though.
A couple other little tidbits. Did you know, Chris, that you need 3 seconds on the clock to spike the ball?
I did not.
Unless the announced during the game were wrong, there was a end of game. I don't even know. Can't remember which game it was, but it got down. Player, they had a completion. The receiver was smart enough to take himself, get to the ground, and the clock wound down to 2 seconds when they stopped the clock because it was a first down in the last 2 minutes.
Yeah.
After the 2 minute timeout, and the officials put the clock back to 3 seconds, and the announcers at least said that you needed 3 seconds to be able to have the time to spike the ball.
Okay. I mean, I've not heard that before, but sure.
All right. Just another one of those little tidbits Jim picked up. And Chris, you're going to be amazed by this. I am going to compliment Bill O'Brien.
Good.
He's doing something right with that BC team. Now, I know they didn't hold on and win against Missouri, but they represented themselves very well against the top 10 team.
I thought so. Yeah, that's the way you win games at Boston College. That's a formula they've had established down there for a while, and Bill, I think, is a really good fit for it. So, yeah, I enjoyed watching them hang in there. But, it didn't shock me at all that you got the result that you did. Cause again, over four quarters, most times in college football, talent will out, as it did certainly when you saw Toledo take on Mississippi State or Georgia State take on Vanderbilt, just to twist the knife there a little bit. But yeah. I'm glad to hear you say a few nice things about Bill.
I got to give credit where it's due. It wasn't long ago that BC program was just a bad program. So just heading to respectability, good for him. Good for them. And I think you're right. That's a real good fit there. Final thing, Chris, again, we had mentioned earlier, Georgia escaping with a win, and I've talked about the 12-team playoff makes more games more important, but have we reached a point now? It's just win in advance. You just take the win. No one's going to just route everybody through the season anymore.
Well, to the point you made a couple of weeks ago, I do think you're being proven right that the transfer portal is adding to parity across college football. So, yeah, there are going to be more nail biters, even for the teams that have stockpiled a lot of talent and are well coached. So, yeah, I hope so. It's entertaining.
It certainly is. And, again, you add in that there's 12 teams that make the playoffs. So many more teams are in it, which makes so many more games worth watching and having a factor on things. All right, Chris, that is it for our
fire Neil Brown. Fire Neil Brown.
Yeah, let him get in line with Billy Napier. That's the end of our show. Thank you all for listening. Join us next time on the Keystone Kickoff Show.
Fire Neil Brown.
Every day is a great day to join us at Cafe 210 West to enjoy our daily drink specials. Mondays, it's the Cafe Tea Pitcher for $5. Tuesday, Smirnoff pitchers for $7. Wednesday, Bacardi pitchers are $7. And Thursdays, enjoy cafe tea pitchers for $5. All week, we have half-off draft beer and cafe tea from 9 to 11 p.m. and 6 to 8 p.m. on Fridays. So get the gang together and come on down to Cafe 210.